Hey folks, guess what? Beginning in April of 2014, Storyworthy is now dropping twice a week.
Twice? Does this mean more work?
It's a little bit, it's double the work is what it is actually. But two brand new true stories coming at you every week from the Storyworthy podcast.
I guess that is good because that's twice as much me.
Twice as much me.
I'm sorry, my earphones are cutting out. What did you say? So tell your friends, tell your families, tell your enemies, tell everybody. Twice a week. Twice.
This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy. You know, GoDaddy has everything you need to put your business out there and kick ass online. So get started by registering a domain name and creating your website with GoDaddy's easy-to-use website builder. Already have a site? Well, keep it running fast with GoDaddy's web hosting. All right, you guys, let's do this thing. Visit GoDaddy.com, enter the promo code STORY32, and save 32% on new purchases. Some limitations apply. See website for details. And remember, enter the promo code STORY32 and you are supporting Storyworthy. Thank you.
This is Sheila Ratner and you're listening to Storyworthy. Now take off your clothes.
Hey! Welcome to the Storyworthy podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney. We're coming to you from downtown Los Angeles at the headquarters of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power.
Oh, you know, I send them a bill every other month.
I know. They're scary, aren't they?
We call it the LADWP, I believe.
LADWP. Very, if you're a big Chinatown, the movie fan.
Oh, right.
You know, it's the Department of Water and Power is the, you know, the villain, basically, in that. And you know what? The original name of the movie, Chinatown, was going to be Water and Power.
Oh, really?
A double entendre, because it was about the water and power, and it was about how power water gives you power in California.
No, I love that. And also, I never understood why it was called Chinatown. I mean, I get it. They were in that restaurant in Chinatown, but it never correlated to what the movie was about.
No, no, no. Chinatown was a symbol of evil winning out and the bad guy winning, because there was something that would happen. He used to be a cop in Chinatown.
Oh, no, I'd see.
Yes,
see, this is where you always school me in old movies. You know so much more than me.
Exactly.
Tell
especially
me
this. This is a movie
Tell
that I know a lot about because it's so awesome. So he originally in the script, they never, ever went to Chinatown. And Chinatown was just a symbol of rich people and bad people winning, because he had been a cop in Chinatown and something bad had happened, which is never explained. But Roman Polanski, the director, insisted that they had to go to Chinatown. I believe it was Roman Polanski. It might have been the producer. And so in the final scene of Chinatown, they actually are meeting somebody in Chinatown. That's when, okay, spoiler alert, 1974, Faye Dunaway, who has been raped by her father.
Oh, wow. See, I don't remember
this. Yeah, she was raped by her father, gave birth to a daughter. This is the whole mysterious plot. Again, spoiler alert, I'm sorry. She is holding a gun on the father. She's driving away. The cops shoot her eye out. Very Greek tragedy.
This. Yeah.
And the father takes, you know, who is rich and is based in part on, I don't know who he's based in part on. I think Mulholland. Not that Mulholland was a murderer, but that he's the guy who got the water from the valley and brought it to Los Angeles to make Los Angeles viable, because as they say in the movie, without imported water, Los Angeles will just dry up and not exist.
People are in a desert.
This entire city would not exist if we weren't stealing water from the Owens Valley, which is many, 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 many miles away.
Los Angeles is one of the only places in the world where the ocean meets the desert. Did you know that, Hannes?
Yes.
It also happens in Africa.
Yes, but you can't drink any of that water.
You can't drink this water either.
You can't irrigate with it. Right. No, that's what I'm saying. It's like that's their whole.
Listen, so I can't even believe the plot to Chinatown, and I have so much to do. You know what I mean? Like, I have so many movies I need to watch and books I need to read, and I don't know if I'll ever get through it, but I made a note.
Chinatown you should see because
it is.
And
I'm going to come back with information.
It is a great film noir. A modern film noir. Well, you know what? You're not as much of a loser that you haven't actually seen. I remember when I first met you, I forced you to go to a screening of Double Indemnity.
I cried.
Before I knew that you thought everyone in a black and white movie was dead.
Because most
and therefore
are.
It made you sad.
Right.
Which, you know, again, I'm like, what about a movie from 1983 where people are dead? Or, you know, Heath Ledger is dead. You can't watch a movie with Heath Ledger in. You can't with Philip Seymour Hoffman. You won't be able to watch a movie with
Heath
him.
Heath Ledger, I will make an exception. Philip Seymour Hoffman was a genius. Another exception. And so tonight's topic is Power, brought to us by comedian Sheila Ratner. And I'll tell you, Hannes, you know how it is in L.A.
Yeah.
You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a very talented person.
That's true. Although, why you're swinging a dead cat, I don't know. That's one of those phrases that never made any sense to me. Like, who's doing that? Who's picking up dead cats and swinging them?
Well, I'm not really sure. But listen, here's how I found Sheila Ratner, or she found us, through comedian Amber Tozer. And, you know, she's done the show.
Yes. And
she's doing the show again.
She has an entire house filled with dead cats. It's a thing. She just has piles
and
of cats.
Mattresses, if you recall her story.
She goes to the mattresses and fills them with dead cats.
This is the worst story ever. She used to sell mattresses on Craigslist.
That's true.
She would buy these mattresses that were new mattresses, I guess.
No, they were new mattresses, right. But the cover story, she learned from a crazy guy that you had to have a cover story. That you couldn't just say, well, I bought a mattress and I'm going to sell it to you for a little more. People wouldn't like that. You say, hey, we got it from a store. They ordered too many. And then you feel like you're getting a bargain and then people want to buy it.
I see what you're saying.
That was her thing.
Well, anyway, Amber, all of 85 pounds, would put these mattresses on top of her. I think it was like a VW Bug or something. And it's just very comical to picture.
Yeah, well, with her girlfriend. So, you know. That's okay. Be stereotypical,
story,
but I bet
tonight
somebody
is
could
about
lift
power.
In that relationship.
Tonight is about power, Hannes.
Power.
Brought to us again by Sheila Ratner. And I was thinking about power, you know, as it's the ability to influence or control the behavior of people. Am I right?
Yes. Something I lack almost entirely.
Well, it doesn't have to be like it can be influencing people, right? It doesn't have to be coercion.
Right, although the word power, yes, true, because if you're influencing people, that's a subtle kind of power. But for some reason, the word power has taken on a very overt tone where it's like, I can order you to do something. Yes.
Right, or like a social class.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but it could also be like the power of persuasion. It can be manipulative, right? And you can enable somebody to have power.
That's true. You can give people power over you. That's what they always talk about. Forgiveness and all this kind of stuff is like if you forgive someone who's wronged you, you're actually taking away the power that you gave them inside your head to make you, you know, miserable.
I think it's one of those steps. I think that's one of those steps.
One of those
like
steps?
Like 1 through 12, those AA steps.
It probably is.
I think it's something 7 or 8, one of those.
That's one of those steps. I don't know. Step skipper. That's
tricky,
a
though.
Shout out to all the Seinfeld fans there.
What was it?
George runs into a James Spader is on the show and he's in 12-step program. So he's apologizing to people for things. And he apologizes to Jerry for thinking his name is Gary, but he never apologizes to George for saying that his giant head would stretch out the neck hole of a sweater he didn't want to lend him. And he's obsessed with.
You have a mind that is, it just, you soak up information and pictures, moving pictures that you've seen, Hannes.
Yes.
And you just can recall, you know, the way you did Chinatown.
I have.
Now we're into Seinfeld.
I have, for some reason, a mind that can retain facts that are completely useless to me in my actual life.
Okay.
This is what I have.
If you were to watch Jeopardy, or when you watch Jeopardy, do you remember the answers to those questions that you heard?
When I'm watching it, I do. But I have a feeling if I went on there, first of all, I'd end up with like, you know, instead of the category being 1940s movies or television based on books, which would be like a category.
Or Seinfeld episodes.
Yeah, Seinfeld, it'll be like, you know, physicists who were left-handed and be like, I don't know what the hell's going to. But I actually went to a Jeopardy taping. I've told the story before, but the smartest guy I ever knew was a contestant on Jeopardy. And it's a completely different thing to be standing on the stage, even if you're an experienced performer. Cameras are on, the lights are on, the audience is there. You got to buzz in. It's like, I don't know that I feel really smart when I'm watching Jeopardy, but how smart would I feel doing it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to find out how dumb I would feel.
Well, let's go back to power for a second.
Power.
Here's the thing. Just
you know
when
who has a lot of power? Alex Trebek.
Just when you
he's got all the answers in front of him. He looks at you like, you dumb asshole. Watch, you didn't know.
Do you think he's a really smart man? Really? Listen, if you
I have no idea. He might be the stupidest man on earth, but he looks like a genius.
But if you were to go out to dinner with him or meet him at a party or cocktail party or something, do you think he'd be super smart, boring, charismatic? Do you know anybody that has ever met him and hung out like
no.
that?
No. I have the feeling he's a very nice person. He's from Canada. He's probably a little dull.
Would he smoke a joint with me? Would he do that?
No. He would smoke a pipe.
Well, fuck.
He's a pipe smoker.
He would?
I can.
Interesting.
No, but not a marijuana pipe, you crazy hippie. He would smoke a pipe like your grandpa smoked, with a bowl, and he would have like a thing, and he would puff on it and say something like, you know, in 1840, Arthur Conan
here's
Doyle.
I want to say one more thing about power. One, when you think you have it, that's when somebody calls you and says, you know. It's tragedy, isn't it? Something happens. You know, either somebody has died, where you have absolutely no power happens, and it just smacks you silly right back down where you belong. You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly. See, now and if you've listened to Caleb Bacon's interview with me on The Man Show, it was an excellent episode,
really
I have to say, because it was like my cynicism is about how powerless we really are. But it's not – I don't find that to be a negative. I just find it to be – it's like – people think they have all this power. It's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to create this situation. It's going to be perfect, and it's going to be fine. And if something can happen, it doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be a bus crash. It doesn't have to be anything. Just things happen. Life goes on. It turns out you weren't really in control of anything. Just like you said, you weren't really in control of anything. And the key to life to me is to know that going in, so that when it happens, you aren't crushed and
I understand,
tossed
but don't you think
road.
That part of that opinion that you have is that way you can avoid having to do a lot?
That is not the intent. That is, however, the side effect, which is something, a struggle that I have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a struggle that I have. But what I'm looking, but the positive part of it is to not be crushed every time you get reminded that the world is really not that interested in what your plans. You know the old saying, if you want to make God laugh, make a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the negative part of that is that it's tough to push through and do, you know, things where you don't see the immediate end game. But the positive part is when something goes wrong and something else goes wrong, you're like,
told
you. That's not even told you, just like shrugging, like, okay, I didn't get that part. I still fall into the trap, like I had an audition, I had a callback, and I was like, oh, if this is exactly the right time, I need this job, I'm perfect for this job,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't get the job. And you still, as an actor, you fall in the trap where you're like, I'm not going to think about it, I'm not going to worry about it, I'm not going to, son of a bitch, I didn't get it.
I know. It never stops. That is never ending, that cycle of audition, you don't really think about. Call back, now you start thinking a little more about it. Call back goes well, now you start thinking a lot about it, even though the whole time you're saying, don't fucking think about this because you're never going to get it. And you know
right.
you're not.
It's like, yeah,
and it's
like,
not about how good you are or your talent. It's just about the odds are. And it's really, in the end, like a roll of the dice. It's just somebody's, you know, like yesterday I had a callback and it went very well. There was a moment after we slated, I was slating with my so-called father and, you know, like an 80-year-old man. And after we said our names, his phone went off because he's 80 and doesn't know how to turn his fucking phone off, right?
His jitterbug?
Right. And no, it goes, his phone just went like, da-da-da-da-ding. And I like, it was automatic to put my hands out and curtsy. It was automatic. And everybody busts out laughing. So, of course, I take that with me that the audition goes well. And I have an expectation that I should book this job. But you know what? I'm not going to fucking book it.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Maybe I will.
Well, you know what? No. Talking about, but this actually dovetails back into power, which is we are giving power as an actor. You're giving power to these other people who have no interest. They have only self-interest of their job.
Of course.
And we have this, they can like you and love you and think, you know, who's the most charming person to come in here? Like Christine Blackburn. She was awesome. You remember that funny thing she did? Right. Anyhow, she's 3 years too young for this.
Of course.
Okay.
No, I understand. We're not gonna... They don't even say that. They say, she really was funny. So anyway, did you guys call that other girl? You know what I mean? Like they go right by it. It's not personal at all. They have another idea in mind.
Yes.
But it's interesting that we're talking about this because I have it right here written in my little notes here.
Mm-hmm.
That I do in what I call pre-production.
you know, paper could just burst into flame at any time. So writing things down is...
And sometimes sometimes the only power I have, I feel, is the power to say no to an audition.
Ooh, that is an odd power. Yes, yes.
And
that
my agent, she gets pissed and she gets mad at me. You know. And then she always throws it back later. Well, Christine, I didn't know you needed money because a couple of months ago you turned down that spot where you were supposed to wear a bikini because you're middle-aged in a hot tub. And I say, you know what? I've told you 1,000 times I'm going to always turn down the bathing suit commercials. And it's not that I, like, abhor my body, but I'm just not doing that. That's where I have personally drawn the line. Hmm. Dub French porn with you, Hannes?
Sure, of course. That we would always do.
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that was tons of fun. But it's funny, actually. You wouldn't do that. I would think you would because most women in your age bracket don't look as good as you. So you would be the person they're looking for.
Anyway.
No, it's not. I know you're not fishing for compliments.
Yeah.
But you're saying this is the... she should stop sending you out for that
stuff.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it.
Right.
I really don't. And I'm not going to drive to Santa Monica when I got to pick up my kid. Then I got to make another arrangement to get caught in traffic to go out for the job that I don't want. And that always comes through in the room, you know, because I'm mad. I'm mad at them. They're putting me on camera. And they're like, what are you so mad about? I'm like, I don't want to be here. But right. Now, I don't say that. And I do give it my best.
Right.
But I'm just saying that sometimes to say
you're
no.
You're lying. You say exactly that. You walk in, you kick over the chair, you go... Yeah, you know, this is the only business where if you walked in and you actually just threw a fucking hissy fit, they'd be like, you know what? She's got something. We need her. And you'd say, no, I don't want your fucking job. They're like, oh, my God, up the offer. Up the offer.
Hey, you guys. Listen, we got a great guest here tonight. Sheila Ratner's here. I'm so excited. Like I said, she's new to the show. So we're really glad she came by for us. And before she comes on, I did want to mention, you guys, you can always email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com. We do love hearing from you. And also, we are on the Twitter, @Storyworthy.
@Storyworthy.
It's so simple.
And you can find me @HannesPH, but probably easier to just find Storyworthy because I'll find that then that way. And
you go on and on and on about that. Just say @HannesPH.
I just said that.
I know, but then you say because about Storyworthy, because, you know, you have your own Twitter.
Drawing the power to myself. Drawing the power to myself. I can afford everything in this room. I can afford. There used to be a great joke, and I can't remember who told it, where they would do their daily affirmations at the 99-cent store.
Yeah.
Close their eyes. I can afford everything in the store. I can afford everything in the store. Oh, who did that joke? It was a woman. Oh, I have to remember that.
Probably
was
Jackie Cation.
It was
like
not Jackie Cation.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, hang tight because Sheila Ratner is on her way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have writer Jeff Kahn.
And I'll be talking about a big, fat, hairy vagina.
That's next week on Storyworthy.
This is Huell Hauser, and you're listening to Storyworthy with both ears. You can't see us. We're in your head.
And we're back. We've left the Department of Water and Power. We walked down about 3 blocks to the home of the teriyaki burrito. A little place called Sam's, and we're having a teriyaki burrito, and it really doesn't. It's not good at all.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would mix teriyaki with a burrito. That doesn't make sense at all.
It's a California fusion thing, and I don't care for it.
I don't believe in it.
I believe, first of all, in a very racist way, that the ethnicity of the chef and the ethnicity of the food should match up. Like, you go to Glendale and you go to an Italian restaurant and there's an Armenian guy making pizza. I'm sorry.
You're a racist.
I'm a food racist.
Yeah,
I'm very specific.
I think that's true.
I need an Italian guy making Italian food. I need a Chinese guy making
Chinese food. Because L.A., we have so many choices and it usually kind of breaks down that way.
Yeah, and actually the entire kitchen is filled with people from Mexico. So really, what am I talking about?
It all melts down together, doesn't it? Yeah. All right, you guys. Sheila Ratner is here right now. She is a comedian and an actress. And you know, Hannes, she won California's Funniest Female at Flappers Comedy Club.
Flappers!
You appear at Flappers.
I've been at Flappers many occasions.
She won that in 2012, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. She probably got like a BMW and a...
Or a gift certificate to Islands Restaurant across the street.
No, probably a gift certificate to just the restaurant inside Flappers. Or perhaps...
exactly.
By the way, you know what second prize is?
Free Diet
Coke. A plate of garlic fries. from which Flappers.
Is, you know, honestly, not a bad prize. I've had worse. I'll say that. All right, Sheila, she was also a series regular on Prank My Mom. Do you remember that? You wouldn't watch that, would you? Prank My Mom.
I'd like to pretend that I watched it, but I can't. I hate prank shows. I hate pranks in life, and I hate pranks.
Well, you're not going to hate her.
No. No, she's not. No, I don't hate her.
Sheila.
She didn't write the show. She's in the show.
She was also on that show, The Middle, on ABC. You know that show.
Oh, I love that. Now, that show I love. But you know why I like that show? Because it doesn't condescend to the characters. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, these are people in the middle of the country. They're pretty realistic to that. It's not like, oh, look how stupid these people are.
Well, you're the one that just had to change your voice when you said that. You know what I mean?
What?
Like you would, oh, look how stupid these people
are. No, but I'm saying it's like, we're a show in Missouri. I'm bringing a cow in. It's like, you know how I always defend Milwaukee? It's like, I used to work for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. People would be like, they have a symphony? Yeah, they have a symphony. It's not, they're not cows wandering the streets of Milwaukee and Indianapolis and Iowa City. Well, maybe Iowa City. I don't know.
Sheila also wrote a column called Fashion Slip-Ups for Life and Style magazine for 5 years. That sounds very funny.
That sounds like something I'd read a lot.
I think so, too. All right, you guys, you can find her on Twitter, at Sheila Ratner. I'm going to spell it, and here's why. It's tricky. That's why.
Yes.
At S-H-E-L-A-G-H. R-A-T-N-E-R. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Sheila Ratner.
Things changed for me a couple of years ago. I had a power outage, if you will. I'd worked for years, had a good run, made money as an actress, and then it stopped. Taking matters into my own hands, I did some fiscal restructuring and took a friend up on her offer to move in, just till her son came home from school. She lived in a spacious two-bedroom condo. I paid a little rent, but mostly cared for her blind pug, Reggie, when she needed help. Reggie was a study in resourcefulness, making his way around the house like a wide receiver who knew every inch of the field by heart. I stayed in her son Zach's room. Now, when you're going through a midlife crisis and getting help from a friend, there is nothing more disconcerting than waking up in a room full of Philadelphia Eagles paraphernalia and staring at several bobblehead dolls nodding at you, as if to say, wouldn't it be nice if you could just start over? Just live in this room and grow up again, make all the right decisions. My power had always been in my direct connection to a crowd. My therapy, to go on stage and connect, to turn poison into medicine. I was still performing, but not making money. I was finding out what I was made of. Feeling my feelings. I'd had a comfortable life and had been easily distracted from self-reflection. I was also finding out what a real job entailed. Let's talk for a minute about going to apply at a restaurant as a woman in your 40s in L.A. I may as well have grabbed a copy of Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All and done a monologue. I had to find creative ways to save money as well. For instance, when I got a ticket, I decided to do community service instead of paying the fine. It was humbling to find myself at Goodwill. If you do community service at Goodwill, you are not allowed to buy anything. It's the unkindest cut of all. I saw a lamp in the shape of a purse for my friend's daughter and had to have it. I found myself outside the store asking strangers to buy it for me, like a kid in high school trying to get a six-pack of Mickey's Big Mouth. But I really got into working there. I couldn't wait to be promoted to the color wheel. If you work with a color wheel, you methodically arrange every piece of clothing on the rack from purple to yellow. It's incredibly soothing. I felt like it was something Judy Garland might have had to do at a mental institution in the 1960s, and I liked it. The highlight for me was the morning I heard this said over the intercom without any irony. Jose, I need to see you in women's pants. I was the only one laughing. I felt connected to my creativity. Even though I wasn't working, I was still aware of humor. Eventually, I started to realize this experience of lack could help me learn something, feel something. I started meditating. I went on a retreat. I chose to work at the retreat to offset the cost. I got there 3 hours early to cut buckets and buckets of vegetables. I washed chairs. I swept. It was very Karate Kid. I learned about a therapist who had two offices, one for the story and one for the work. I learned to appreciate the space between the event and the reaction. There is a space there if you don't fill it with self-loathing and anger or regret. I closed the door on self-recrimination and anger. I had become extremely envious of others during this time. I couldn't read any Facebook post that started, 11 years ago today, the most incredible man walked into my life. I was so busy feeling jealous, I'd lost my connection to others. And I didn't like the negative person I'd become. We'd been told to watch for rattlesnakes during our hikes at the retreat, but one day I heard a noise and it was just a little bunny. There's a life lesson, Sheila. Stop expecting snakes and start expecting bunnies. One last word on retreats. People fart aggressively. And I don't mean by mistake during yoga or meditation. I'm talking about purposeful farting. No one was even trying to hold it back. I returned from the retreat and got a call from a producer at Dancing with the Stars. We had spoken about possible warm-up work. Warming up an audience takes many forms. At its best, you do 30 minutes at the top of a show and keep the energy up during commercial breaks. At its worst, it's a 7-hour taping, filled with making audience members dance and throwing candy at them and T-shirts at them. The latter resembles a scene from Clockwork Orange, but it pays well. It turned out to be stand-in work, not stand-up work. As a friend said, oh, you're standing with the stars. Traditionally, if you are a stand-in, you need to look like the person you're standing in for, but on an elimination show, they really just need bodies. Of course, every week someone is eliminated, so that adds to the stress of being a stand-in. When you get to set, you pick a sign for the person you'll be playing. On principle, I never played Snooki. I don't see her as a viable star, and the day I saw her chatting with Valerie Harper, Rhoda, on one of the best-written TV shows of all time, I knew there was something inherently wrong with this business. If I wanted to feel like a long-legged dancer, I was Elizabeth Berkley for the day. If I wanted to connect to my inner diva, I was Amber Riley from Glee. And the dancers, oh, the dancers. I was surrounded by beautiful, crazy women. That's my wheelhouse, people. I was home. I immediately had a crush on Peta Murgatroyd, a lovely blonde dancer from Australia. One day I jokingly said, hey, on this take, you be the stand-in and I'll dance because I have this dancer's body. She laughed and grabbed my arm and said, who are you? You're funny. I wanted to say, make a life with me, Peta. But instead, I looked at my sign and said, I'm Lisa Vanderpump. When the bands needed lighting, I played air guitar for Huey Lewis in the News. I played air drums for Enrique Iglesias. I sang air backup for Lady Antebellum. I danced. I danced like there was nobody watching. But there was, of course. And when we rehearsed a dance-off, I was the last one tapped out. I'm a terrible dancer. And going from the Titanic theme to Achy Breaky Heart to a tango, it was a challenge. But it was fun to make the crew guys laugh. I love crew guys. They are just so capable with their belts and tape. No group makes me question my sexuality quite like crew guys. One day, Mandy Moore was on set, a well-known choreographer from So You Think You Can Dance. She gave me some blocking, and I asked if I could now say I'd been choreographed by her. We laughed, and I imagined the fabulous parties I was going to go to at her place when we became good friends. But my turn as a dancer went terribly awry. She told me to walk with purpose on an 8-count. A what? An 8-count. Oh, okay. I walked into 12 dancers and got trampled like a beagle in a horse race. They're like stallions, and they're strong, and they're sweating, and they don't care if you're in the way. No, I guess I'm not going to hang out with Mandy Moore after all. Then I was asked to lip-sync the Winona Judd number. I was excited. The familiar strains of Foreigner's music started. I gotta take a little time to think things over. I better read between the lines in case I need it when I'm older. I wanna know what love is. I performed that song, lip-synced it 7 times and was teary-eyed by the end of it. I got accolades from the other stand-ins. They said it was moving because I did want to know what love is. I wanted to forgive myself and connect again to my creativity. During our rehearsal for the finale, I approached Karina Smirnoff, the dazzling Russian dance troupe member, and told her how much I loved her performance. She turned to me and said, "Thanks. I'm just so exhausted." We're all struggling, even Karina. I could only nod and realize I'm doing the best I can for where I am with what I have. I think about a time in the not-so-distant past when I felt very much at my wit's end. I called a helpline, and I had a bottle of Vicodin and a very poor attitude about life. After talking a while, the volunteer said, "Well, what is it that's keeping you here?" I explained. I knew my friends and family would be sad, but I wasn't worried about them. It was my cats. What would my cats do? She gently asked, "How many cats do you have, Sheila?" In that moment, I wanted so much to say 30, just to mess with her. Oh, yeah, I guess I am still here. I guess I still do want to live. I still want to make someone funny. I want to make a situation funny. I want to feel that connection. Wow, that's powerful.
Well, of course, the first question is, how many cats do you have?
Well, I'm down to one.
You only have one?
I had two at the time, Ginger and Daisy.
Oh, I've had a Daisy before. I had a Daisy for like 12 years, but then, you know, I had to get rid of Daisy, remember, honey?
Yes, yes,
oh,
but tell her the story.
Well, I don't want...
Daisy was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Oh my God,
and
no.
Gained superpowers. No,
no,
I'm kidding.
Daisy, she did not like my baby. And she was fine until the baby could walk, and my daughter started walking at about 10 months.
Oh.
And then one evening, when I was home nursing my baby on the couch in front of the TV,
yeah.
Daisy comes up to the couch, and I think she's going to lay with us. It's going to be a nice moment. And she circles around, feels around with her tail, circles around,
yes.
And shits on the baby.
Oh my God.
And then Daisy went in the bathroom until I could find another home for her.
And she did find another home
and
for
I
her.
Did, so thank goodness.
Wait, she circled around and then just shit on,
that's
shot
exactly
on the
right.
Baby?
Yeah, and that's where I had to draw the line. Now we can't have that cat anymore.
Yeah, no. There's only
she'd
so
been
much
peeing
shit
all over the house
yes.
prior to that. This was the leading up to.
Oh, that
you know,
was
I,
the...
Yeah, this was where I had to draw the line.
Yes, the shit line, that broke the camel's
that's,
back.
That's what I think. Okay,
wow.
So
it's like the Japanese in Pearl Harbor in America. You know, we were like, listen, we're not going to get involved. We're
yes.
not going to get involved. The Japanese shit on our ships.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to. Okay, now we're
I
in.
I want to back up. Can you explain to the audience a little bit more about what being a stand-in is? Because I don't think some people understand what that's all about.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had never done this kind of work before, and my friends were producers on the show, and obviously I'd started, as I said, warming up. Thought it would be warming up the audience. Stand-ins in general look very much like the people they're standing in for. For instance, you know, Brad Pitt's stand-in would be 6 feet and blonde and look like him.
Boom.
And they wait for the lighting
yes.
to be set. And they wait for, in a case like Dancing with the Stars, it's a live show. So there's 8 cameras. And when it goes live, it goes live. So they have to block every single setup. And the judges and hosts look a lot like the judges and hosts. But when it comes to the, you know, I played Nene Leakes recently, who
right.
is a...
You literally, in this case,
housewife.
Are just a body standing
you're
where...
just the, a body.
But I found it interesting that you get to choose every day who you're going to stand in for.
Depending on when
like
you get there, you get
they didn't cast you for it. There, you just pick up the
you
piece
have,
of paper.
You have, there's about 16
that's
signs
sort of a
sitting there.
So you're
thing,
like, I'm
it?
Billy Dee Williams
yes.
today.
Yes.
But
it's,
so
it's
the idea, just so folks out there listening understand, this is all done before the show ever even starts. This is just so the cameras and the lights, they even know where to go.
Yes.
So they make, and they also make little marks on the stage, right? With
yes,
tape?
Yes, yes.
So you look
tape.
For your tape.
Yes.
And then you're just standing there until they say, okay, we got it. You know, in other words, we got the light the way we want it. We
right.
got the, is this about the camera work right now as well, right? The camera.
That's why I sang Wynonna Judd 7 times. The first is to get me standing there and get the cameras. Then there's the lighting. Then there's always a dance number that goes with the person performing. So then the dancers do it.
So that, in other words, they have to go through the lighting department.
And well, I know Judd is not going
to
stand there for this.
They have to go right. through the camera department.
Right.
Right. So they're
exactly.
going through two different departments. Exactly, Hannes.
Yeah.
A star, or even if they're not a star, it's just not in their contract to stand around. So they get
right.
you
yeah.
a stand.
When I was an extra on the Aviator, Leonardo DiCaprio's stand-in looked so much like Leonardo DiCaprio that I thought it was him, and I was like very impressed. I was like, boy, he's here for he is a professional. He's going to be here for the whole time setting up the lights. Oh, that's not him.
You know, my dad used to stand in for Richard Gere. Isn't that funny?
Really?
Pittsburgh, because they used to shoot a lot of movies in Pittsburgh, and my father looked a lot like, not his age wasn't Richard Gere's age, maybe 20 years older, but he just had his hair and his physique.
Yeah.
And so he stood in for like three Richard Gere
movies.
He did
have Richard Gere's hair,
strange,
didn't he?
Strange, isn't it?
I mean, this took, you know, this was over a year that I waited to get this job. This is kind of a coveted job, and it's a fun job to have while you're still doing other things.
I would think it would be,
does
too.
Does this pay okay?
Yeah,
but
how did it pay?
Yes, it's all SAG-AFTRA. It's all union.
So it's like $5.35 a day.
There's a minimum. There's a five-hour minimum.
Oh, I see.
But you can be there a couple hours and... You know,
but so is it, how much money then? Is it $300, $500?
No, it's $120 for 5 hours.
$120, okay. Yeah.
But it's very unlikely it's going to be only 5 hours. It's going to go over.
Yeah, and also it's just, I guess the point of my story was, you're on a set, you're looking around, a lot of creative things occur to me when I'm there.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm writing about it. And so you sort of are in the mix.
Oh,
and
sure,
you take a lot in.
Yeah.
You know? And then there are people there who are really stand-ins. I mean, they've been stand-ins
their whole lives.
Yes.
Which is a step up from an extra, for sure.
Yes, yes.
And when you were on Dancing with the Stars, how was the warm-up? Because that would be hard to watch somebody if they weren't good.
Oh, well, it is a lot of... I went to a taping, actually. I'm not there the day of taping, because what we do is
before. Okay, good. See,
I thought you were there right up until it went on the air.
No. You're there to set everything.
Interesting.
It's a lot of, you know, rah, 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 and
cheerleading,
bringing people on and getting them to dance on stage and dance in front of everyone.
And now warm-ups, they can make a couple $1,000s a show. So this is a very coveted job.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I remember trying to get... I wanted to be a warm-up so bad. This is when I first moved to LA. I was so naive. I got business cards made up that said Christine Blackburn warm up.
No.
Boom, I'm a warm up. That's what
really?
I said.
That's
good. And I passed them out and ended up teaching traffic school, which is actually just another form of hell.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. And then to even go back further, how long did you work at Goodwill? Like how much time did you have to do?
Well, I was given 23 hours. I mean, my first day I met someone and I said, how much do you have?
23 hours, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, she said 106, and I was like, did you kill someone? What are you doing here? You know, like, that's intense.
Yeah.
Basically, I went to the judge, and he said, what do you do? I said, I'm a stand-up, and he said, are you currently employed? I said, not at this time, and he goes, I'm going to give you 23 hours, and I said, of stand-up? Just continuous stand-up? I'm going to have to repeat some jokes, for sure. I don't have... And he said, no, community service. So I was given... several options, picking up trash on the beach, picking up trash on the highway.
Yeah, actually, Goodwill sounds like, I didn't even realize that was an offer or an option for community service, because that doesn't sound, I mean, it might be a little boring, but it doesn't sound as bad as standing on the side of the highway.
I know that, I know Beverly and Fairfax Goodwill now, like the back of my hand.
That's
I can
interesting.
Find, and I said to the woman, I'll be back when I'm done to buy things. And she said, everybody says that.
Wow.
Because we can't, but you can't be there when the truckloads come in, because then you would be getting the pick of the stuff.
So in other words, that's why you can't buy anything as an employee of Goodwill.
Yes, because at 3 o'clock they put stuff out and there are people who show up, and I've asked them what they do.
Oh,
some of them are set dressers.
Oh, wow.
Some of them are pickers. This
they know when
said,
to come.
I'm a picker. I said, what does that mean? She said, there's somebody in Milwaukee who wants a Bionic Woman lunchbox, and I look for that.
Wow,
for
that's
that
so interesting.
Yeah, Goodwill is
an
interesting place.
Seems like it's a
place.
Hard way to make a buck, boy.
Yeah.
You know, to just search for one item like that. I mean, I guess if you have time.
Yeah, it's better than working in an office. Everything is better.
I mean,
remember, people, everything is better than working in an office.
That's the Hannes Finney theory of life. And I sort of agree with that. Hey, I married a crew guy. I'm down with the crew guys.
Oh, yes.
Khaki shorts.
He had quite a belt, yeah.
Duct
and
tape.
Shorts at all times.
It doesn't
so
matter.
Capable.
Yes, that cat is on fire. I'll put it out.
That's
they're,
right.
They're
the light doesn't go on. I'm here.
Yeah.
Toilet
right. They're
overflows.
Like they're
I'm
like Batman.
Oh, no.
They've got a utility belt.
They're good drivers.
Are they?
Yes, they drive well.
Mm-hmm.
You can always be, you know you're going to be taken care of with a crew guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's something, though, I don't care for. I know they also look at a lot of porn. Now, I'm not against porn, but on the truck, do we need to do that together?
Yeah.
Do we have to all meet on the truck to look at porn?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
That's interesting. Well, it's a very testosterone-driven sort of a job.
It certainly
so
is.
It might just... Also, the thing, not to defend people who watch porn, but... it's really boring to be on a set. In case people around the country are like, how dare they? It's like you're spending these guys, and remember, the crew guys are there first to last. They get there before everyone and they leave after everyone. And all actors do it. It's like, I'm surprised they don't just smack actors in the face all the time.
Yeah, a crew guy's minimum day is 10 hours. Minimum 10. And then often 12, and it can go to 14 easy.
And there's a bunch of people
on a
like,
movie.
Oh, can we wrap? And to say, you know, meanwhile you're eating like a steak and salmon combo that somebody made on a fucking grill. And you're like, oh, why does the crew have to eat first? And why can we go? And meanwhile, these guys, you're looking at another hour before you get to drive home. And these guys are going to go home at midnight. And they're going to come back at 6 a.m.
And they have
what
to be together. Right. In other words, like, so, and it's usually the same crew. They follow one another.
Yeah, and they're all dependent on each other.
Project.
Yeah.
Right. And so they know each other so well. There's really nothing else to talk about.
You know
about.
What? I just realized why they have to watch porn. So they don't have to fucking talk to each other.
That's what I mean. Yeah. There's nothing else to talk about.
Because, yeah, but they don't. See, men watching porn together are not going to speak to each other because that might involve eye contact.
That'd
so,
be awkward.
While, yeah, in an awkward time. So if you're watching like a movie, you might actually have to speak to people. But if you're just watching porn, you know, that's what I think is weird about like I'm not a strip club guy. It's like I want to go and sit next to my friends and we'll all have boners together.
Ooh, icky.
Yes,
right, exactly. No,
strange.
I agree. Like I'm not, that doesn't sound like fun to me. It's like I don't want to have boners with you.
Yes.
You're not in the, anywhere in the list of people I want to have boners with.
See, even if I'm watching a regular movie, I don't like to talk. I don't understand. Like now
I don't
at
like
movies, people
movie.
Eat sizzling fajitas. They're eating full-on meals at movie theaters and texting and applying for
you
college.
You should not be allowed to have
housewives.
Food that makes noise in a theater.
Well, it used to be popcorn and a drink, and now it's really just
I haven't been to those
courses.
Theater. What theater is
No,
that?
They have theaters where they serve dinner.
No, I know they have that, but I don't know of any.
I haven't been to, yeah,
just
I agree.
Mean loud nachos and people talking and texting and there's a whole film going on.
What, about the purposeful farting?
Oh,
the
yes.
purposeful farting, I just felt like there wasn't even an effort being made. There was just absolute, almost an expression. It was silent for hours at a time and maybe that was the way people were.
What did this
were.
Retreat revolve around? What concept of retreating from
what? Well, it was the end
what?
Of the year, so it was to get your ducks in a row for the new year. And it was about being silent, which for a stand-up is a real challenge.
It was about being silent. Oh, no, okay. Now I get the farting.
It was silent,
you
got to
say something.
So this was like a moral persuasion type of power.
Moral persuasion? What does that mean?
In other words, you know, almost like getting you to be silent.
Yes.
They were persuading you. It was almost like a religious thing. It seems like almost a religious experience.
Well, it came out of a meditation workshop that I go to, but I guess...
but that's a power.
Yeah, the notion...
You.
Yes, the notion of being powerless, you know, that you were talking about before I came on, as far as like letting yourself say, I really am powerless over people, places,
right.
And
it's
things.
Amazing how, you know, that I didn't make that clear.
Say
saying I'm powerless gives you power. It does.
It does. So
it
saying,
does.
Saying
like,
I'm not going to define myself by being a stand-up,
like,
but I'm
going to
be here and write about it.
What I want to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The universe is not going to, it's like, oh, you should work, you know, I mean, where I grew up, it's like you should get married and you should have two kids and you should work in Northwestern Mutual Life for 40 years and then you should retire. And then eventually, you know, eventually the winters will become too much to you and you'll move to Florida.
Yeah. And that's
and it's
that's
like,
right,
I don't
right.
want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Are you
if
from,
there was any religion, it would have been Buddhism that it was attached to in
I
terms
see.
Of your question.
A cool
yeah.
one.
You know,
are
yeah.
you from
you
Pennsylvania?
Am I? No, I am not.
Where are you from?
Well, I was born in Amherst, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. My dad was teaching there, but I moved every couple of years all over Europe and South America.
Because they were academics?
My father was an English professor.
They were jewel thieves.
yeah, they were jewel thieves. Yes, exactly.
Your father was Cary Grant, and your mother was Grace Kelly.
Leonardo and DiCaprio
wow.
in that film. What was the film?
I
was
going to
say Take the
can.
Money and Run.
Catch me if you can.
Yes. Yeah.
That's very
yes.
interesting.
I'm sorry,
so what
was the real reason? Why were they...
He's retired now. He was an English and American lit professor, and we took he took sabbaticals and Fulbrights. It actually informed my voiceover career because I didn't really have a discernible accent, and it informed my improv career because when you're put in a school in Prague at 10 and you don't speak Czech, you learn how to improvise.
Wow.
Because they put us in the local schools wherever we lived. So Germany, Italy, Brazil.
Did you miss your friends each and every time?
Czechoslovakia. You know what? I just visited a good friend. I just taped a special in Oakland, and I just visited my oldest friend I've known since fourth grade because through all of those moves, we stayed in touch.
Wow.
It was
and that
hard
was without
to be.
Email.
That was writing letters, you know.
Now, kids,
you know.
Letters were a thing where you'd write words on paper and you'd send them through a man in blue shorts would come in black socks.
Yes.
Well, I love your voice. I love the cadence of your voice.
Thank you.
It's so listenable.
Thank you.
And the audience says, then shut the fuck up, Christine, and let her talk.
Yeah, yeah, stop. Yeah, and speaking of voiceover, we do have to point out that you are not related to Bill Ratner, friend of the show.
And he's the announcer of the show.
He's the announcer of the show.
Yes, we have.
But you said that when you came here, people were like, oh, do you know him or you've got to meet him, right?
Yeah. Well, I had a longstanding account when I moved to L.A. from New York and was in the booth every week doing that. And every time I'd show up, the engineer would say, I imagine you're related to Bill Ratner. And I'd say, I have to meet this Bill Ratner. And they would say, oh, Bill Ratner. And then they would mention Brett Ratner, and it wasn't nearly as warm and friendly.
Yes.
But, you know, rehearsal is for faggots. Love Brett.
Oh, that guy, yes.
Yes, that nice thing he said. Anyway, I am not, we don't know if I'm related to Bill. We haven't done the Jeep, but I have gone to, we both did The Moth. I did The Moth for 6 years in New York. He does it here. I went to his one-person show with a good friend.
Yeah, that was a great show.
And she said, when he tells a story, it reminds me of when I used to watch you tell a story at The Moth. Our mannerism, and he's come to see me do stand-up. Right.
Nice,
yes,
good.
It's
well,
very
I'm
going nice.
To do an email introduction today.
Yes.
Hey, do you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yes.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Kids, several years ago, I was in New York and I was at a voiceover booking playing the mother of a child, which I often have done in commercials. And I was with a little child actor, and the minute I walked in, his mom said, oh, I'm his mom, but now you're his mom for the next hour and a half. And I cringed and was a little frightened. And when we walked into the booth, he kept hitting the mic and then hitting his headphones. And I was like, Tucker, please, please stop doing that. And every time at the end of the commercial, I would improvise. They said, at the end, we're going to fade out. You're sending him off to school. You've got Kleenex. You've got all this stuff. At the end, just fade out. So at the end, I would say, hey, Tucker, have you got everything? You got your Kleenex. You got your Playboy magazine. You got your half pint of Jack Daniels. And I kept saying, what is she doing? She's changing the script. What is she doing? And they said, she's improvising. And he said, I don't like it. And she said, well, you know, they said, well, this is what she does. She improvises. So on the final take, they said, Tucker, you know, on this take, you can improvise. He said, what do you mean? I said, you can say whatever you want. And I said, hey, are you ready for school? And he looked at me and said, I don't like you, lady.
That is a perfect story.
There we go.
So funny. How long did you have to be on set with him?
Awful. It was in a booth, so it was just 90
minutes. Yeah, that sounds even worse. You're inside
him. That was the most honest moment that kid had through the entire booking.
Absolutely.
You know, because then he goes, I should have finished, but he said, I don't like you, lady. And then he goes, I mean, mommy. Because you realize
that. Because you realize be on your website.
Broken character.
You go to SheilaRatner.com, it comes up. I don't
like you, lady. Yeah. Oh, it was.
That is
I mean,
so funny.
Mommy, and I was like, oh.
Tucker, you're going to be a big star in this business because you're fucked up.
One of those kids say the darndest thing moments.
Yes.
It really is humorous.
Yes, it was, and I loved it. Those guys at McHale Barone kept that snippet.
Uh-huh, sure.
And they
well,
said
that's
on
I'm
slow
saying.
Days they would just play it and howl.
That's the voiceover studio?
Yeah, it's a voiceover studio in New
that
York.
That should be there. That should be there. That,
I don't
that
like
could
you,
work
lady.
For any call,
I know.
Any answering machine.
It was great.
It's really very funny.
It really
yeah,
was
just as a drop in, like if yeah, just as a, like a radio show drop in.
Yeah,
matter of fact, send a thing. See that. Send that to us because we'd like to just.
I'll drop it. I don't like you, lady.
I don't like you, lady. And he kept saying like, this isn't on the script, and they were like, she's just. He was like, this isn't.
How old was he?
He was probably about 10.
That's shocking. He was really sheltered. His mother did a number on him.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, he can't.
I love the fact that your mother, that woman made the same joke for an hour and a half, which I totally see how it is. Yeah. You're his mom now.
No,
you're his mom now.
Exactly.
Like,
God,
I
was slapping
her upside
the head.
I crapped on him when he was a baby.
Yeah,
and
that could have happened. Oh, don't say my daughter would ever be like that.
No.
Listen, my daughter is never going into the business, I guarantee it, because she needs the approval of no one.
She's gone to auditions and she does not give a shit.
No, I meant it. I was just doing your callback joke.
Honestly, I know your daughter seven. Actually has self esteem, so she won't be in show business.
Yeah. What were you going
no,
to say?
No, just
about
that we were talking earlier before the show, but so it's Sheila, but it's spelled SHELAGH, which is like my problems all over again, which is it's a name that no one can pronounce
yes.
on the first one ever. No, it has to come back to me. No, it's all, but it's just like It's such a people like Christine, they don't understand our pain. Of
they
how,
don't. I'll tell you,
Anthony,
I mean,
we don't feel it. Do yeah, we?
I grew up with kids. Like if somebody had a name like Amy, I was like, oh, Amy, because my mother liked Sheila Delaney, who was an Irish playwright,
right?
And then she married a Jew from the Upper West Side, whose last name was Ratner.
Yeah.
And then I went to jury duty in Manhattan, and they said Schlug Ratner, and
it's
I was
schlong.
Like,
Schlong. Then we're getting into
Schlug. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
We're getting
then
into we, Schlong
then we're
territory.
Back, yeah, Schlegehe, Schlaf. She
yeah,
left.
When I first saw it, I thought it would have some like. That's the other funny thing to me is the spelling makes me think, oh, it's going to be Irish and shalalehilahola.
Right.
And no, it's Sheila.
Just
it's like wait, because there's already a way because there's like no way to spell Hannes that's not my name.
Yes.
But your name is like it could just be spelled normally, but they just had to fuck with your teachers.
Yep.
Every
what is
you know,
the derivation?
Let's talk about something that erodes your self-esteem. Every year, you would go into a new class,
yes.
And the homeroom teacher would never pronounce your name correctly on the first day.
Yes.
And then you have to live with that the whole fucking year.
And you don't ever get one of those little license plates.
Yeah,
don't
never know. Had a fucking yeah. License plate.
And you
plate.
Never get one of those license plates
not
now.
Find a
we're all out of Bort license plates.
Listen, we got to wrap this up, but I want to say, I saw one of your videos on Funny or Die called We Got Spirit. That was
oh, yes.
One of the funniest damn things I ever saw. You guys out there, you have to go to Funny or Die and just put in We Got Spirit.
Thank you.
By Sheila Ratner.
Yes,
and
we do.
Jennifer Coolidge.
How about
in
you?
It.
Yes, yes. That was
She's
an all improvised mockumentary. That was the trailer
it
for it.
It is so funny. I can't
it's,
tell.
I watched Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders making the team, and I was fascinated by these
it's
women.
So fascinating.
And I thought, what about a group of women who just dance in parking lots who are in their 30s who are still trying to relive the old Texas cheerleader, you know?
Yeah.
And Jennifer's an old friend. We were in Groundlings together
oh,
in New
wonderful.
York. And I said, would you help me
she's
out on this?
So perfect.
And
yeah.
Jennifer is, yeah, Jennifer's
she's so
a talent.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And her delivery
yes.
is so
oh,
deadpan.
Yes, an hour of just improvising with her was
I would
a
think
delight.
That would be like one of the best days of my life.
Yes, yes,
she
it
is
was.
So funny.
Yeah, she
her
is.
Delivery always reminds me of when in Best in Show when she says, we have soup.
Yes.
You know, there's this
we
delay.
Both like soup. Yes.
There's this delay of her delivery that is outrageous.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
she's
and she
from,
looks like a cartoon.
Yes,
I mean, it's not an insult.
Coolidge,
she looks
I mean,
like a cartoon.
Calvin Coolidge
lineage. Wow.
Massachusetts, so she can really, really nail that kind of wasp
she's so perfect.
Thing, too. You know, and she's
yeah.
funny.
So again, you guys, We Got Spirit. It's on Funny or Die. And Sheila Ratner, what a delight. Thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, thanks
thank
for
you,
having
yes,
me.
Great fun
you.
Talking power with you.
Yes. A lot of fun.
Power. We don't have the power. How did I not get that bad imitation in earlier?
What is that?
It's supposed to be Scotty from Star Trek.
Oh.
Captain, I cannot do it. I don't have the power.
I'm just a country doctor.
No, that's McCoy.
God damn it.
God, you're not enough
all right,
of a
you
nerd.
Guys, we're going to wrap it up right now. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick.
He knows who Dr. McCoy is.
And, of course, our storyteller tonight. Thank you so much, Sheila Ratner, for coming. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith.
Oh, Ethan Begada. Oh, thank you, Sheila.
John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Oh, I have no idea who that gentleman is.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Fenning, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me. takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.